Leia watched with interest as the Puek priests added a swaying, fluid dance to their weird chant. The Kyrmak had completed the circle and was addressing the sky above, opening its arms as if to encompass the entire world. "Remind me again why we had to be here," Han whispered. Leia shushed him. Leia couldn't help feeling a growing edginess as the ceremony built in intensity. The chanting had reached an almost fever pitch. The crowd was utterly silent now. Even Han abandoned all pretense of disinterest, leaning forward as though hypnotized by the swaying, singing aliens. Then suddenly, a stab of urgency cut through Leia. She didn't know where it was coming from at first, until she identified its source as the Force, and from outside her. "Han," she whispered, then louder to be heard over the Puek. "Han, it's Jaina." He instantly snapped upright in his seat.
"Where?"
he asked, looking vaguely into the crowd in search of his daughter. "She's not here." Leia struggled to interpret what she was feeling. "She's calling to me through the Force. She's trying to warn us. She's..." She shook her head, unable to get a proper reading on the message. "Something's about to happen." Leia closed her eyes to sort out a mad tumble of wordless impressions. Images she couldn't interpret flooded into her on a tide of growing urgency. "Han, I think we need to get out of here. Quickly!" Han rose to his feet immediately. With Cockman and Meowal gathered close around Leia, he started to lead the way out of the stadium. They reached the edge of the prestige stand unmolested.
"What's going on, Leia?" Han asked. "Where is she?"
"She's near here. I don't want to distract her, Han. She's..." A near-perfect image formed in her mind. Explosives. A timer. Seconds decreasing rapidly in number.
"It's coming!" she gasped. "We have to get down! Run! Everyone, run!"
Then, another desperate image from Jaina, so clear it formed words in her mind.
"Tahiri!
No!"
The world turned white, and her connection to Jaina instantly went dead. Despair was a feeling Jaina had never succumbed to, not entirely, but frustration was a completely different story. She had tried twice to distract Salkeeli, but the Rodian was watching her far too closely. Then she felt a touch through the Force that was at the same time familiar and strikingly unfamiliar. Tahiri was nearby and coming closer. Unaware of the subtle life energies flowing around him, Harris had produced Jaina's lightsaber from the folds of his robe and triumphantly activated the shining blade.
"There remains only one thing to do to make the story watertight," he said. "If the Jedi really are to be the enemy, our hero needs some realistic wounds, don't you think?"
Salkeeli grinned as Harris approached Melinza. Jaina couldn't wait any longer. If she was going to act, then she needed to do it now. A swift outward movement of her arms got rid of the binders, and one solid Force push knocked the lightsaber out of Harris's hands, and she called it to her own. She duck-rolled as Salkeeli brought his blaster to bear on her, his eyes widening in surprise at the abrupt turn of events. She kicked the Rodian's legs from beneath him. Harris wasted no time getting his own blaster out, but Jaina was on her feet in time to deflect his first two shots, directing them harmlessly into the wall. Another two bolts hissed by, exploding loudly somewhere behind her. Then, with three quick steps, she lunged at the Deputy Prime Minister, clubbing him with the hand grip of her lightsaber. He collapsed back against the wall, a look of startled annoyance frozen on his face as he slumped to the floor. Confident that there was no longer any threat from Harris, she turned her attention back to Salkeeli. Melinza, however, had already taken care of him. The girl had him pinned to the ground with one arm twisted up behind his back. Jaina nodded, impressed. "Well done," she said. Then, with dismay, she saw the ruin of the remote detonator. One of the stray blaster bolts had struck it square in the top casing. Jaina thought frantically. "How much longer did we have on the timer?"
Viram shook his head. "I have no idea."
"You've lost, Jedi,"
Salkeeli cackled. Not yet we haven't, Malinza said, grabbing him under the chin. Tell me where the bomb is, and tell me now.
Not that you can do anything to stop it now anyway, but it's under the premium stalls, tucked safely away behind a ferrocrete support.
But it still doesn't help us, Malinza said, because we're trapped in here.
Jaina hurried across the room to where the Rodian lay pinned by Malinza. A quick search of his pockets, and she soon found what she was looking for, her comlink.
Tahiri, can you hear me?
A second's pause before,
Jaina, we're right here outside the door.
I know. Can you get it open, though?
The code sequence might take a minute or two to get through, but yes, we should be able to get you out.
We don't have a minute or two, Tahiri. Listen, there's a bomb. You have to get to it and defuse it.
Where is it?
Jaina repeated the information that Salkeeli had given her.
Okay. Gower's going to stay here and try to get the door open.
Who's Gower?
He's the Rin who's been helping us. You can trust him.
Don't worry about us. We're probably safer in here than you are. Just get going. Jaina sensed Tahiri hurrying away up the corridor, using the force to maximize her speed. Jaina turned away from the door and squatted down next to the squirming Salkeeli, still futilely trying to break free. How do I disarm the bomb, Salkeeli?
How should I know?
He growled. I'll try again, she said, this time with some force persuasion behind it. How do I disarm the bomb? His eyes glazed over slightly as he said,
It can't be deactivated now.
That threw her for a moment.
There has to be a way.
She pushed even harder with the force.
The remote detonator,
he answered without resistance. Then, glancing over to the ruined box, he smiled nastily.
But like I said, there's no way to disarm it now.
Jaina cursed under her breath.
I'm almost there.
Tahiri said over the comlink, her voice crackling through dozens of meters of durasteel and ferrocrete.
Do you have the information?
Tahiri, I don't think it can be disarmed.
There has to be a way, Jaina.
There isn't. I've seen devices like these before.
Then what are we going to do?
We try to warn Mom and Dad and get them to alert Kundertal. If we're quick enough, they might be able to clear the stand and get everyone away before...
How much time do we have?
I still don't know, Tahiri, but not much. So get out of there as quickly as possible, okay? She tried to raise her mother on the comlink, but there was no answer. Instead, she reached out through the force.
Mom, you have to get out of there. There's a bomb.
I found it,
Tahiri said.
I have the bomb right here in front of me.
Jaina's anxiety doubled.
What are you still doing there, Tahiri? I told you to get out.
I'm going to try to disarm it.
Jaina reached out with all her strength and tried to force meld with Tahiri. The link was faint, but she did receive a brief clear view through Tahiri's eyes. The bomb in front of her was not equipped for manual disarming, but it did have a timer. In bold blue digits, Jaina could see they had 70 seconds left. 69. Then, something cold and dark pushed her away and the link ebbed. The locker door hissed open, and the Rin called Gower rushed in, his tail straight out behind him.
What's going on?
Get that door shut, she told him sharply.
Sparks flashed, and Jaina received the sharp tang of burning wires through the force. At the same time, she felt the equally sharp stab of hopelessness, as Tahiri realized she didn't have a clue what to do next.
Tahiri, you've got to get out of there!
Jaina yelled into the comlink.
No, there has to be a way!
There isn't. Now move!
You don't trust me, do you, Jaina?
You don't have to prove anything to me, Tahiri. Please, just...
I can do it. I know I can.
Can we argue about this later, Tahiri?
But again, something dark and powerful overtook her, its presence casting a black shape in Jaina's mind.
Munmareshu Kamasami.
The words cut into Jaina like a jagged blade.
Tahiri!
No!
Tahiri cried, her desperation shattering the fragile darkness.
Leave me alone! Duroik Vong Prat!
It was a Yuuzhan Vong battle cry. Raina? Jaina asked. The voice changed to basic with uncanny ease.
Anakin killed me, and now you want me dead too. I won't let that happen. Krell Nag Shnirishvek.
Wait, Raina!
It was too late. Time had run out.
The bomb went off with a muffled concussion that Jaina felt rather than heard. The floor bucked beneath her, throwing everyone to the ground. The lights went out. Someone screamed. Jaina collected herself when the shaking died down. She frantically reached out into the darkness for Tahiri. No matter how she tried, she couldn't find her anywhere. Tahiri was gone. Mom? Mom! In the aftermath of the explosion, Jaina's mind was filled with psychic pain. She sat up in the gloom of the room's emergency lighting and collected the comlink from the floor where she dropped it. She quickly activated it. Mom! She opened the locker door to reduce the interference. Mom, can you hear me? It took a few moments before Leia answered.
I hear you, Jaina.
Relief rushed through her at the sound of her mother's voice.
Are you all right?
I'm okay. But Mom, Tahiri...
I know. I felt it too.
How bad is it up there, Mom?
It's utter chaos. The blast took out the Prime Minister's stalls. Security is trying to clear the area now.
Jaina caught flashes from her mother. Frightened faces, tangled wreckage, and blood. Lots of blood.
What do we do now?
Viram asked, stepping up to Jaina. We go topside to help, she answered.
I'll go,
Melinza said. Jaina shook her head. They might not believe you.
No, the girl said, but they will listen.
And I can stay here and keep an eye on these two if you like, Viram said.
Jaina thought about this for a moment, then nodded. Okay, and I'll back you up when I get there.
Wait a minute, Gower said. Where are you going?
To find Tahiri.
Then I'm coming too, he said.
Jaina shrugged helplessly and let him follow her out as they retraced Tahiri's steps through the damaged corridors, updating Leia as they went. At the heart of the destruction, they found a clear space about 2 meters across. The blast had destroyed everything around the area, but nothing within it. And there, at its center, lay Tahiri, curled up like a child hiding from a nightmare. Jaina tried reaching for the girl through the Force, but she still couldn't find her.
What happened here?
Gower asked. She must have put a Force bubble around herself, Jaina said. It must have closed when she passed out. Gower moved to the girl's side and rolled her over. The Rin felt for a pulse in her throat when there was no response.
She's alive.
Jaina tried to reach her through the Force one more time.
Tahiri.
Nothing. Jaina had never felt anyone so empty before. The girl felt hollow in the Force. Almost. She stopped the thought, not wanting to introduce the idea into her mind. But it was too late. Almost invisible, she thought. Like the Yuuzhan Vong. Jaina's comlink beeped.
Jaina?
Her mother's voice came again over the comlink. Yes, Mom.
Rescue teams have reached the epicenter of the blast.
Looking up, she could see movement through the hole. We're directly below. Are you with them?
Yes. They started pulling bodies out of the rubble.
How many? Jaina asked.
4 so far. And...
Leia's hesitation told her there was worse to come. What is it, Mom?
It's Prime Minister Kundertal. He's dead.
Reports were garbled from below, but the sense of disaster was all too vivid for Jag's liking. 2 senators were dead, along with 6 guards and a couple of guests. 40 more had incurred wounds, with injuries ranging from hearing loss to loss of limbs. And of course, there was Kundertal himself.
Jaina's reappearance had brought some comfort, briefly. She had only confirmed everyone's worst fears. Blaine Harris had set the bomb, hoping to incriminate the Galactic Alliance and make a martyr out of Melinza Finesse, as well as getting Kundertal out of the way. On the heels of that thought came an announcement from Pride of Salonia.
"We've just had word from Sentinel," Captain Main said. "General Paneeb has declared martial law. He's requested that, no matter what happens, we don't take any direct action."
"What do you want us to do?" Jag asked Main.
"Just back off a little. This is a touchy time. Whatever this honor guard is really about, we're just going to have to lead them to it for a while."
"Understood." He relayed the order to his pilots and changed the vector of his own wing, letting the trio they'd been following drift slowly away. As soon as Tahiri was strapped safely onto a repulsor gurney, Gower joined the rescue effort. Han raised an eyebrow at the sight of the Rin, but was too grateful for the extra set of hands to question his presence. Beneath a foreboding sky, darkened further by a thick pall of smoke hanging over the stadium, the Poek bodyguards had tightened their ranks around the Kiramak. Jaina had barely had the chance to do more than hug her mother and father in relief at seeing them again. It was only later, when medical reinforcements arrived, that she had time to actually step back and take a proper look at the world around her. The survivors had a shocked look in their eyes, even those who helped in the rescue. No one paid any mind to the thunderstorm that was brewing overhead. It seemed almost irrelevant in the face of what had happened. But there was something else that wasn't as easy to ignore. A sound that nagged at her from below the rumbling of the crowd. It was a strange and haunting wail, a ululation that seemed in search of a note of despair, but couldn't quite find it. Her father looked up, frowning.
"You hear that, Leia?"
Leia turned in disbelief. "They've started again." Jaina followed her gaze to the heart of the stadium. Sure enough, the ceremony had recommenced. She could see lithe reptilian aliens dancing in a circle, and one multicolored shape prowling the center, uttering noises that sounded like the angry song of some mighty bird. "I don't understand," she said. "Why would the Kiramak finish it now, when it would obviously be safer later?" Jaina remembered what Harris had said earlier about the similarities between the Si Rook and the Yuuzhan Vong. The warriors of the Yuuzhan Vong wouldn't consider going into battle without making appropriate sacrifices to Yun Yamka. The Si Rook, in turn, were loath to risk their souls on a world that hadn't been consecrated. Perhaps the sudden carnage around them made them want to get the ceremony finished as quickly as possible, just in case more attacks were to follow. Jaina's thoughts were distracted when the sound of engines whining joined the chanting. It was growing steadily louder. Jaina looked around, then up. Emerging smoothly from the clouds were three Daki-class Puek troopships.
"Reinforcements?"
Han asked of no one in particular.
"A quick getaway, perhaps," Jaina suggested. "They might be keen enough to consecrate in the middle of all this, but I doubt they'd want to stick around afterward."
"You could be right, honey," her father said. The alien vessels rotated in midair when they were over the stadium and descended at a safe distance from the ring of Poek guards.
"Excuse me, mistress,"
C-3PO said.
"Look," Han said, shouting over the growing din. "Three more!"
Another trio of ships was descending beyond the stadium walls, the same type of troop ship as those that had just landed.
"If I might interrupt, mistress..."
3PO tried again, gesticulating off to one side. Suddenly, the engines from all three of the ships in the stadium below cut out, allowing a relative quiet to settle around the area. For a moment, everything was still. Then, with one eye on what was taking place with the Puek, Jaina leaned toward C-3PO and muttered,
"What was that you just said, 3PO?
"The ceremony is complete, mistress,"
the golden droid said.
"Thanks, Goldenrod," Han said, "but that seems pretty obvious from where I'm standing."
"But, sir, I've been trying to explain that the ceremony required the Kiramak to give Bakura a new name, Jui."
Leia faced him fully now. Did he happen to mention this fact to the Bakurans before he did it?
I doubt that very much, Mistress. You see, the Kiramak has also dedicated Shui to the Sea Ruvi Imperium.
3PO, are you sure about this? Leia asked.
Oh, quite certain.
Rain began to fall in great sheets across the stadium as the sides of the troopships opened, issuing ramps. Jaina squinted to see through the rain, trying to make out what lay inside. Dull brown paint was falling away in the rain, revealing golden scales, the sign of the Sea Ruvi priest caste. Realization struck Jaina like a physical blow. Of course. The treaty with the Puek was a smokescreen for the real tactic. Once Bakura belonged to the Sea Rook, once it was consecrated, they could advance on it in force.
This can't be good, Han said, as columns of russet-scaled Sea Ruvi warriors began marching out of the nearest troopship.
Jag's frustration immediately increased when, at the peak of the consecration ceremony, the feed from the ground dissolved in a burst of static. Saloni, I seem to have a communications outage. Anything coming through from your end?
Negative, Twin One,
came the reply, distorted but comprehensible. Jag waited anxiously, with only the persistent static to listen to. Then, amid the crackly hissing, he heard another noise. It was like a wailing, constantly fading in and out. It was unsettling, both haunting and hypnotic at the same time.
I have launches.
The voice of one of his pilots jolted him out of his reverie. A quick glance at his board confirmed the report. The nearest of the two Puek carriers, Erinung Ka, was disgorging dozens of smaller vessels into the space around it. His computer instantly recognized and marked the familiar droid fighters, but that proved to be only half the complement of the new ships. Twin Sons, full alert. Salonia, are you registering this?
We have it on our scopes now. Trying to raise General Panin. Communications are out down there.
The transmission dissolved into static again. The voice returned briefly with,
it could be jammed somehow. Be on alert.
The signal vanished beneath a howl of rising interference. Clicking his wingmates, Jag brought his claw craft around to match vectors with the nearest trio of Honor Guard fighters. Two droid ships flanked a Bakuran Y-wing in perfect synchrony, shadowing its every move as it swept around the planet. He scanned the formation for energy emissions and soon discovered that shadowing was as far from the truth as it could get. The two droid ships had powerful tractor beams locked on the Y-wing and were forcing it to go where they wanted it. He plotted its course. In two orbits, it would intersect with the carrier Ferinri. A cold chill ran through him. The droid ships were kidnapping the pilot. A quick scan confirmed that the same was true of all the other Honor Guard flights. There was no way he could warn Twin Sons Salonia or General Panib. He could only hope that the others would understand his actions and follow his lead. Arming his forward batteries, he thrust hard to cut off the droid fighters. A burst from his blaster cannon skittered off shields that were tougher than he'd expected. It weakened them slightly, but there was certainly no penetration. As soon as he'd swept past, one of them broke away to give chase. The first of his wingmates, Twin Six, met it with a hail of laser fire that forced it to change course. It ducked away, although not before sending a spray of energy at Twin Three as it did. The second droid ship and its unwilling charge were making a break for it, abandoning all pretense of cooperation and changing course. Instead of arcing gradually around the planet, the pair headed directly for Ferinri. The masquerade was over. There was no longer any mistaking the Honor Guard for what it was. Jag lined up behind the fleeing droid fighter and sent a volley of lasers through its weakened shields, quickly reducing it into space dust. The liberated Y-wing instantly changed course, wiggling on its long axis in what Jag took as a gesture of thanks. By then, his tactical scopes were full of new targets. Seeing one of his squadron's X-wings trying to shake off the Vasset fighter riding its tail, Jag set off in pursuit. He got a lock on the fighter as it dog-tailed after the X-wing, and he fired when he thought he had a reasonable aim. but the fighter suddenly banked left after the X-Wing and the shot went wide.
Jag cursed under his breath as he brought the claw craft back onto the fighter's tail. Before he could line up another shot, two more fighters came at him from his port side, weapons blazing angrily at him. He sucked air through clenched teeth sharply and nosedived away from the incoming fire. Seconds later, when he had chance to look again for the X-Wing, he saw it fall apart in a blaze of fire beneath the Vesette's blasters. The two fighters he had just eluded were quickly back on his tail. With the rest of the squadron engaged in the battle elsewhere, he knew that help wouldn't be coming anytime soon. He was going to have to make his own luck.
Han was backing up, looking for the nearest exit. From below came the sound of screams as the crowd ran in a panic from the advancing aliens. Security guards opened fire on the Sea Ruvi warriors, who responded with blistering barrages from their paddle beamers. In leaps and bounds, propelled by powerful thigh and tail muscles, the Sea Rook soon overwhelmed the Bakuran troops. The Puek guards, who had originally protected the Kiramak from attack, turned out to be genuine Puek, unlike the disguised priests. They protected their leader behind a tight huddle, beamers at the ready. A tactical retreat might be called for, Jaina suggested to her parents. Jaina turned to find Gower standing at Tahiri's side. We need a way out of here.
The way we came, then.
The Rin pointed at the craterous hole in the stands.
It has to be safer than staying out in the open.
Jaina agreed, and together they began to gather up the confused rescue workers and spectators still milling about the area. She explained her intentions as best she could, asking them to trust her as she sent them down into the hole. There was little resistance from the people. In the absence of any other plan, most were more than happy to follow her instructions. Once everyone was in, Han and Leia were to go next, then wait for Gower to lower Tahiri into the hole on her gurney. Jaina and the Nogri guards would take up the rear to protect everyone's backs.
What about the Prime Minister?
One of the women asked as she went past Jaina.
What about him?
She shouted back over the rain.
He's dead. We can't leave his body here for the Fluties.
But... The protest died in her throat.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Leaving her parents to supervise the evacuation, she looked around for the stretcher on which she'd last seen the body. She found it tucked away behind an outcrop, covered in a body bag. If she could slave it to Tahiri's repulsor gurney, maybe they'd be able to take both of them out in tandem. The moment it got in her way, she told herself, then she would cut it loose. The living had to take priority over. Her thoughts stopped in mid-track as she went to move the stretcher. The body bag caught on a twisted seat and pulled away, revealing it to be empty. Her puzzlement was short-lived. Someone else must have had the same concerns and already taken the body to safety. She returned to the crater, where the last of the survivors was disappearing into the hole. Before she climbed back down into the hole, she cast her eyes up at the cloud-packed sky. May the Force be with you, Jag, she thought, wherever you are.
Catching sight of the nearer of Bakura's two moons, Jag pulled his claw craft up and away, aiming with full throttle toward it. He didn't need to look back to know the fighters were following. The space ahead of him was puffing with bright explosions from their misfired shots. He brought the claw craft in steeply to the northernmost part of the moon, hoping to find some form of cover that might help him evade his pursuers. The closer he drew, the less likely this seemed. Without warning, the surface of the moon dipped sharply ahead of him, and the smooth ground he'd been following became a motionless waterfall that poured into a huge canyon easily 50 kilometers wide and at least a couple deep. He brought the claw craft down, getting in as close as possible to the floor of the canyon, swerving frantically to avoid mineral deposits protruding from the canyon floor. The canyon suddenly narrowed, though, and he knew he would have to climb out sooner rather than later, or wind up smashing straight into a wall. He brought his ship up, aiming for a rocky outcrop on the uppermost ridge of the canyon wall. If he could make it back up to the main battle, he might just be able to get help from the others in the squadron to get these fighters off his tail. Realizing his intentions, the fighters opened fire again. Jag piloted his claw craft between the fingers of Rock, but miscalculated the space between them and clipped one on the way through. He called out an alarm as the fighter rolled out of control out into the space above the moon. He emerged from the spin battered and barely in control. The two facets on his tail kept coming. He jerked his claw craft from side to side in a desperate attempt to avoid their grasping tractor beams, but his collision with the rocks had allowed them to gain on him. It would only be a matter of seconds now before a white blur streaked up past his viewport. His sensors barely had time to register the Y-Wing as it flew within meters of him, torpedo ports firing. The enemy Sea Ruby pilots didn't have time to deactivate their tractor beams before they sucked in the proton torpedoes. One instantly exploded. The second took a hit that sent it spiraling wildly back to the surface of the moon, where it flowered in a brief and silent explosion. Jag's rear scopes were clear again, but his little jaunt to Bakura's moon hadn't come without a price. His damaged thruster complained with a stutter and a whine as he pulled hard around. The Y-Wing swooped back to match vectors with him. The pilot waved through her canopy. The Bakuran defense fleet was in bad shape. Sentinel had been hit by heavy bombing and its shields were down. Defender was standing defiant, but without enough fighters to have any real effect on the battle. The Sea Ruby forces rapidly mopped up any fighters it launched. Outnumbered and taken by surprise, Bakura lay open to attack. A triangular formation of seven Vasset fighters accelerated over the horizon of the small moon, coming up hard on Jag and the Y-Wing. Jag urged his claw craft to go faster, but it had given him everything it could. The jamming ebbed long enough for him to check in on his squadron. Twin Suns report! He juked to avoid a crippling energy blast.
Three here. Four. Six. Eight.
There was a slight pause.
Jag, they've got me. And me,
Six said.
Looks like I'll have company then,
Three said.
They've got me too.
Jag cursed. Apart from himself, that left just one pilot free, and he wasn't sure how long he would last. He watched with dismay as the Y-Wing tried to dodge the incoming vessels, only to be jerked back in the clutches of seven combined tractor beams. Jag was so frustrated, he wanted to scream to get it out of his system. He almost didn't feel the tractor beams as they wrapped around his struggling claw craft and started to drag it back into captivity. Jaina watched from the rear of the column of survivors as they moved along the tunnels under the stadium, with only the red glow of emergency lighting to guide them. The Rin led the way, retracing their steps quickly but carefully, with Tahiri's gurney never more than an arm's length away. Jaina heard a commotion ahead. Her lightsaber was out and ignited before she'd barely taken two steps through the stream of survivors in front of her.
Princess Leia! Captain Solo! What are you doing here?
Jaina knew that voice. Malinza? She said, pushing forward. The girl was at the front of the small group, blaster held down at her side. Viram stood between her and their captives, a sullen Salkili and a defiant Harris. Both were bound and gagged.
There are Sea Rook everywhere out there.
Jaina turned to Gower. Is there another way out of here?
I'm not sure.
The Rin sounded calm and unflustered, but the lashing of his tail betrayed his nervousness.
But he might know, he said, pointing at Harris. We followed him in here.
She indicated for Malinza to remove his gag.
Well?
Well what?
Harris said, eyes blazing with anger.
Is there another way out of here?
Why should I tell you anything? To help you?
He laughed lightly as he shook his head.
Don't imagine that I'll be doing that in a hurry.
In case you hadn't heard, your plan went horribly wrong. The Puek were just a smokescreen for the Sea Rook. The Sea Rook are on Bakuran soil, and it's partly your fault they're here. You should have made sure of your new allies before selling your soul to them.
It wasn't him who sold his soul,
said a new voice from the shadows farther along the corridor.
A tall figure stepped into the light.
The market for politicians,
Prime Minister Kundertal said,
is perhaps, unsurprisingly, quite small.
You? Leia couldn't keep the surprise out of her voice. But you're...
dead? The big man smiled. Not quite. Luckily, the blast only stunned me for a time. I woke up down here, disoriented and lost. I heard footsteps and saw Melinza, but I didn't want to reveal myself until I knew what she was up to,
and what exactly she was doing with Blaine.
I thought Freedom might have kidnapped him as well as set the bomb. But I guess I was wrong about you, Melinza, and for that, I must apologize.
The girl nodded a weary acceptance. It was Harris, she said. He set us up.
This is impossible, the accused man said. That bomb was... I mean, they said you were dead. Well, they were mistaken.
Kundertal pulled his right hand from beneath his robes to reveal a blaster. Although the weapon pointed only at Harris, Jaina instinctively tensed. Something about the Prime Minister wasn't quite right. His presence was unlike any she'd felt before.
You must forgive our surprise, Prime Minister, Leia said. But the last hour has been confusing, to say the least. Unfortunately, the comm channels are jammed, and there are Sea Rook right behind us. We need to get out of here as quickly as possible. If we can get to the Falcon, that would be ideal.
The Prime Minister nodded.
A sensible plan, he said. Blaine, you were about to tell us if you knew a way out of here, I believe, before I rudely interrupted.
Why should I help? The way I see it, I have absolutely nothing to lose.
You have your life to lose, Kundertal said simply.
The blaster in the Prime Minister's hand fired, and Blaine Harris fell back onto the floor, dead before he hit. Jaina stood stunned as the blaster came around. Harris had been guilty of treason and murder, but she would never condone cold-blooded execution as punishment, and had never expected it from someone like Kundertal. In one smooth motion, Kundertal pressed the blaster directly against Melinza's temple. Jaina froze. If she had thought she couldn't be more surprised than she already was, she was quickly proven wrong. The Bakuran Prime Minister opened his mouth as wide as it would go and called out in the Sea Ruvi language. It consisted of just three notes, but they were so loud, even the echoes hurt her ears. An answering reply came almost immediately. Kundertal grinned in triumph. Rapid footfalls came down the corridors behind and ahead of them. Deep, fluting calls passed back and forth between the two alien search parties as they converged on the maintenance area. Six Sea Ruvi warriors burst out of the corridor to Jaina's left, running with long, bounding strides and flicks of their mighty tails, paddle beamers held before them in taloned hands. They came to a halt, hissing and screeching at the sight of the fugitives before them. The leader directed a series of piercing notes at Kundertal, who responded fluently in the same language. 3PO, Han prompted the droid from the corner of his mouth.
I believe it is a standard welcome,
the droid said, looking from Kundertal to the Sea Roo. The giant saurian indicated the body of Harris and swished its tail.
Now it is reprimanding the Prime Minister that he has wasted this one.
The second party arrived before Kundertal could defend himself. At its head was the largest Sea Roo Jaina had yet seen. A beautiful red female warrior, with pronounced ridges running back along her snout and across the top of her skull. Behind her came five more warriors of ordinary size, protected by four golden priest caste Sea Rook, as well as the Kiramak itself, its brighter colors subdued in the dim light. The large party concluded with a group of Puwek warriors that fanned out to cover the entrances. The Kiramak moved forward with muscular grace, its massive jaws snapping as though at imaginary insects. A series of eerie melodic notes then issued from the mutant Siru's mouth.
Surrender now,
C-3PO translated.
And I will ensure that, once intact, you will be put to productive tasks.
We were told you no longer required entechment, Leia said, not attempting to hide the disapproval from her voice.
I suppose that was just another lie. The Kiramak executed a graceful bow.
One of many, Leia Organa Solo,
it replied via C-3PO's translation. Leia's lips tightened. From under her robes, she produced her own lightsaber, something she only ever did when all attempts at diplomacy had failed. It cast a bright light across the face of the Kiramak.
You shall never have my life energy, she said with menacing determination.
Or mine, Jaina said, adding her voice, along with her blade, to her mother's vow. The Kiramak backed away, fluting as the guards closed in.
Don't be fools, Kundertal said. You're hearing the words, but you're not understanding them. Entechment isn't what you think it is. It's not the end. It's the beginning. It's liberation, not captivity.
You don't really believe that, Leia said. Kundertal ignored her, addressing the others instead.
You'll be able to live forever.
Suddenly, it became all too clear why Kundertal had betrayed Bakura to the Sirook.
Is that what they've promised you? Leia asked. Immortality?
Kundertal's smile was wide and amused.
Actually, Princess, they didn't promise me anything. I worked it out for myself.
The Kiramak clicked its claws, and half the Puek moved forward through the ranks of Siruvi guards. If there was going to be a fight, then clearly these were to be sacrificed first. Lewothan, even more fidgety than usual, led the contingent. Jaina tensed, her lightsaber igniting with a press of her thumb as she braced herself for the assault. With a cry that both surprised and terrified her in equal measures, Lewothan brought up his paddle beamer and fired point blank.
The engines of Jag's clawcraft were running hot. Despite that, it was still firmly tethered to the Vasset fighters that had captured him, and being drawn inexorably toward a growing knot of captured Bakuran and Galactic Alliance vessels. Comprised of more than 100 fighters, the knot was being drawn through a narrow hole in the shields of the massive carrier, Erinung Ka. Clicks came over the comm as he joined the formation of captured fighters. Bound tight by powerful tractor beams, all he and his squadron mates could do was signal each other as they were dragged to their doom.
This is Captain Mayne.
The voice came clearly over the comm unit.
I'm addressing you on an open frequency. The jamming has been interrupted to let me relay orders from the ground. All fighters must stand down, or planetary bombardment will begin immediately. They have paralysis weapons that can knock out an entire city. Salus Dar will be the first target. Therefore, in the best interest of innocent civilians, I am asking for all resistance to cease.
If we stand down now, Captain, then they're as good as dead anyway, Jag said over the same frequency.
We have an assurance from the Sirook that once the planet is under Imperium control, we shall be treated fairly.
Like the Puek were, you mean? As fodder for droid fighters?
Anything is better than dying. You have to trust me, Jag.
Captain Mayne's voice was thick with tension.
They have Jaina.
Everything suddenly stopped as the Kiramak, without a single noise of complaint, crumpled to the floor. There was a split second during which the Sirook were so stunned by Lewothan's actions that they did nothing at all. They simply stood there gawping at the Kiramak lying on the ground, oozing a gray viscous fluid from the paddle beamer wound in its chest. The Puek were quick to take advantage of the Sea Rook's confusion, and other paddle beamers began to flash in the dimly lit tunnel. For a moment, Jaina was confused too, but that didn't last. It was obvious what was happening. Lewothan and the Puek were rebelling against their Sea Ruby masters. The Sea Rook were better trained and better equipped than the Puek, though, and they soon regained the advantage, fighting back with frightening ferocity.
Jaina had no doubt as to whose side she was on, and when a Siruvi warrior leveled his beamer at Lewothan, she quickly slashed out with her lightsaber and knocked the weapon from the creature's hand. It swung around, attacking her with three raking claws, and she barely managed to dock a decapitating blow. She dropped and rolled, kicking up into the Siru's midriff.
It whuffed explosively and staggered backward. A Puek leapt onto the warrior's back and brought it down. Jaina pulled the beamer from its grasp and threw it over to Viram, who deftly snatched it from the air and aimed it at Kundertal's face. He fixed the Prime Minister with an unflinching stare.
I won't hesitate to pull this trigger if that blaster so much as gives Melinza a bruise.
Neither moved, as the fracas around them came to a surprisingly quick conclusion. The shock of their leader's death seemed to eat at the Sea Rook's initial confidence. As the last of the surviving warriors allowed herself to be subdued, the Prime Minister lowered his weapon to his side.
You ruined it,
he said, looking emptily down at the Kiramak.
Yeah?
Han said, looking around at the Puek collecting weapons and distributing them among the Bakurans.
I don't see anyone else complaining.
The advanced leader of the Puek Emancipation Movement spoke urgently in his lyrical tone.
Luothan asks that you contact our fighters immediately,
C-3PO translated.
He says that the jamming has been interrupted to allow you to speak.
What am I supposed to tell them? Leia asked. Luothan sang again.
Oh my,
3PO said.
He wants you to tell them to offer no resistance, to allow them to be captured.
Luothan explained his plan as best he could in the limited time. When he had finished, Jaina watched Leia glance down at the body of the Kiramak, the look in her eyes suspicious and dubious. How can I be sure that you're not asking me to send those fighters into a trap?
You cannot.
The Puek sang in reply via C-3PO.
But the time for lies and traps has passed. We stand before you now as allies and equals. We will not betray you.
Every instinct in Jaina's body screamed out to believe him. With a brisk nod, she activated her comlink and called Pride of Salonia. The conversation was brief and to the point. The next message Jaina heard over the comlink was Captain Main's general broadcast to all the Galactic Alliance fighters.
This is Captain Main.
The voice came clearly over the comm unit.
I'm addressing you on an open frequency. The jamming has been interrupted to let me relay orders from the ground. All fighters must stand down, or planetary bombardment will begin immediately. They have paralysis weapons that can knock out an entire city. Salus Dar will be the first target. Therefore, in the best interest of innocent civilians, I am asking for all resistance to cease.
If we stand down now, Captain, then they're as good as dead anyway.
We have an assurance from the Sea Rook.
Captain Main went on, maintaining the pretense of surrender.
That once the planet is under Imperium control, we shall be treated fairly.
Like the Puek were, you mean? As fodder for droid fighters?
Anything is better than dying. You have to trust me, Jag. They have Jaina.
Time seemed to have frozen. Caught in the web of the Sea Ruby shields, Jag vibrated with tension. He had no way of knowing what was happening on the ground or elsewhere in orbit. The jamming had returned not long after the end of Main's transmission. Then something strange happened. His sensors registered a slight lessening of the tractor beams holding him in place. A second later, the tractor beam readings dropped again. He flexed his controls and found that his clawcraft had retained a measure of mobility. He sat for a moment, fighting the impulse to pull loose. But then there was yet another dip in the readings, and this time he couldn't help himself. He found his hopes rising. It couldn't just be him, surely. The grip of the Sea Rook on their captives was slipping. The Puek droid ships that had accompanied the Bakuran fighters on the Honor Guard flights were slowly redirecting their tractor beams. The Puek were rebelling against their masters, for real this time, and using Bakuran firepower as their weapon. Jag clicked three times in rapid succession to call for attention. The captured Twin Sun pilots clicked in immediately. When the tractor beams dropped once more, he clicked twice, then twice again. It was the squadron's code for attack, and the response was instantaneous. Jag and his pilots pushed their ships from a standing start to full throttle at virtually the same instant.
Tearing free of the weakened forces binding them, they roared out of formation and swooped around to attack the unprepared Sea Rook. The Vasette fighters were, much to their surprise, caught in the droid ship's tractor beams, reducing their maneuverability. Within minutes, it was over. The Sea Rook were destroyed, and the tractor beams holding the remainder of the captives fell away completely. Jag opened his comm on all frequencies, hoping to regain order before the jamming returned.
"Stay calm, people," he ordered. "Maintain your original formations. Do not fire on the droid ships. I repeat, do not fire on the droid ships. They're piloted by the Puek, remember, and they're on our side. They were the ones who got us here."
"What's so good about here?" one of the Bakuran pilots returned.
"Here we have a target," Jag replied, turning his claw craft in the direction of the alien carrier. "We're inside the shields, and their squadrons are outside. They can't call for reinforcements without opening themselves up for attack from Salonia or Sentinel." The dramatic quadruple reversal of the Puek. From enemy to ally, then to enemy, and now back to ally, left the Bakuran pilots understandably confused. But they obeyed Jag's orders and left the Puek alone. "Go for the tractor beam generators," Jag instructed the pilots swarming around him, searching for targets. "Then make strafing runs across the deflector shield projectors." Then he was down in the maelstrom, finding targets and launching laser bolts as fast as he could. Word of the breakout of the Galactic Alliance fighters came from Salonia within moments of the airwaves clearing. Jaina, however, had no time to hear the details. A sudden blur of motion caught her attention. Thinking that one of the Sea Ruvi captives had made a break for it, she whirled with her lightsaber at the ready. But instead, all she saw was the back of the former Prime Minister sprinting off down the corridor. Viram was lying on his back, rubbing his right forearm.
"I'm sorry," he said, clambering to his feet. "He moved so quickly."
Jaina didn't wait. She immediately set off after Kundertal. They couldn't let him escape. She soon realized what Viram had meant about the Prime Minister being quick. Kundertal's speed was impressive. Jaina could hear Kundertal running downstairs two floors below. His footfalls were heavy and, incredibly, unflagging. His footsteps receded down another corridor, then abruptly stopped. Jaina hesitated at the corner, warily peering around it. The dark corridor seemed empty, but she knew he was down there somewhere.
"You must know you're not going to get away with this, Kundertal," she called,
hoping to get at least an estimate of his position from a reply.
"No," he responded.
His voice was muffled by something other than just distance.
"And I suppose you're going to stop me, girl."
"That's my intention, yes." She frowned, unable to place him.
"I'm afraid that the best intentions can often count for nothing," he said, suddenly dropping down behind her. "Not when survival is at stake."
She spun around to strike out at him, but he knocked her aside as if she were nothing more than a ragdoll. His speed and strength were far beyond those of an ordinary man. She shoved off the wall and came back at him with a strike to the head, igniting her lightsaber with the other hand as she did so. He was under the blow before it could connect, punching up at her and knocking her off her feet. She flew 5 meters through the air, her lightsaber inscribing a wide black arc on the floor as she fell, but she didn't let go of it. He feinted to her left, then came at her from her right, ducking under the blade and delivering a blow to her chest that felt as though she'd been hit by a force pike. She flew off her feet again and landed on her backside with a painful grunt. This time, her grip on her lightsaber failed, and the weapon went skittering across the floor. Before she could snatch it back with the force, Kundertal had already stepped up to finish her off.
"You put up a good fight," he said, looking threateningly over her.
"It isn't over yet," she returned, summoning the lightsaber back toward her. It shot through the air with a whine and a hiss. Hearing it coming, Kundertal rolled away to one side, but not before the sizzling blade connected. He fell back with a roar, clutching his injured arm. Jaina used the moment to climb back onto her feet, albeit with some difficulty. Kundertal, however, had already taken flight. She could see him at the end of the corridor, nursing his arm as he rounded a corner and disappeared from sight.
Jaina!
Her mother was beside her, arms coming around her shoulders.
Are you all right?
Jaina nodded.
Kundertal, she said, waving vaguely in the direction he had taken. He went that way.
Don't worry, kid. We'll get him.
Her father's silhouette led a mixed group of humans and Puek up the corridor after the former Prime Minister.
Be careful!
She yelled after them as her mother's hands guided her down onto the floor, where the world was mercifully level.
You'll be okay, her mother was saying. It'll be all right.
Jaina knew that it wasn't. Something about her fight with Kundertal bothered her.
What was it?
She had wounded him, she knew that much. She'd cut his arm. Then, she saw it, lying in the shadows a few meters away from her.
What is it?
Her mother asked from behind her.
His arm, Jaina said, squinting at the limb.
She hadn't just cut his arm, she'd completely severed it below the elbow. At least the lower part, anyway. But there was something distinctly not right about it. Apart from a small smattering and some minor seepage about the stump, there was no blood to be seen anywhere. Sometimes a lightsaber could cauterize veins as it cut and stopped the bleeding, it was true. But it wasn't just the blood that piqued her suspicions. It was the smell. It stank of cooked synth flesh.
It's okay, Jaina, her mother said, coming up beside her. It's over now. They'll get him, especially if he's injured.
Her mother's words washed over her as she realized uneasily what it was she'd been fighting. Kundertal was a droid.
No, they won't, she said, staring numbly at the artificial arm. Even injured, he's going to get away.
Before she could explain, a barrage of fluting sounded from nearby.
Excuse me, mistress,
C-3PO said,
but Luothan reports that Erin Nunkar has surrendered to the Puek. Ferinri is expected to follow shortly.
That should make up for losing Watchkeeper and Intruder, at least, Jaina thought to herself. What about Jag? She managed to ask her mother. Has there been any word?
There has, Leia said, nodding.
He's leading the attack on Ferinri even as we speak. Her mother's voice was soothing. Under the words, Jaina knew she was trying to say, "It's not your problem. Let it go." Maybe she was right, but Jaina doubted she'd be able to relax fully until she knew for sure that Jag was nearby and they were both a long way from the threat of entechment. Meanwhile, on the other side of the galaxy, in a library on the Chiss home planet Scylla, Jason has located what he believes to be the mysterious living planet Tsonama Sikat. But will he, with Luke and Mara, be able to reach the planet in time? And will Tsonama Sikat join the Galactic Alliance in their fight against the Yuuzhan Vong? Coming July 2003, Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Force Heretic 3, Reunion.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Force Heretic 2, Refugee, by Sean Williams and Shane Dix. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson. Executive Producer, Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Force Heretic 2, Refugee, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2003. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2003, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.